Welcome to Variety Radio Online. This is Amy, and I have my co-host Jess with me, and we are here to talk about Black Spells, Season 3, Episode 3. I'm so excited. And tonight, we have some special guests, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves, because everybody knows here that Amy always screws up names, and I really do not want to walk the plank tonight. So, guests, please introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Commodore Lizzie, and I'm owner of the Diamond Fuel, Commodore of the Fleet, Three Sheets to the Wind. We're pirate reenactors, and we have a lot of fun playing with kids.
And I be Captain Michael Castleton, captain of the ship of the Diamond Fuel, and second in command of the Fleet, Three Sheets to the Wind, which is a very apt name for our fleet, by the way. And as she said, we are pirate reenactors, and we attend many fairs and pirate festivals.
Okay, this is really exciting.
Yeah, it is. Fantastic, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Amy and I were talking last week, and I was explaining some of the stuff that I know in regards to pirates because of my involvement at the Renaissance Fair, and it dawned on me that I should probably get in contact with some people that I know at the Renaissance Fair who have more experience with being pirates than I do. So it kind of dawned on me, and I'm glad it worked out that you guys could be here. So without further ado, I guess we're just gonna talk about the episode. Amy, what did you think about this episode?
I loved it. I thought I was going to hate it because remember last week I said, oh, I hope they just don't film them on the ship. And, dying, eating water and stuff like that. But I loved it. That's what we got, and I loved
okay.
it. I loved every minute of it.
Did you?
What about
I didn't
you?
Think that you were going to like this episode because it was a little slow in certain areas. I loved the episode, but I like most of them. Last week I thought the episode was a little odd, but I did like it. This week it was, I think there was some good pacing. What do you guys think, Commodore and Captain?
All right, I'll go first since she seems to be wandering about. I thought the pacing was very good. It really did show what sailing was like, especially when you get stuck in the doldrums. And back then, you didn't have engines to solve that little bit of a problem. That is a really, really bad place to get stuck. A lot of people have perished in that area. Way back when. And it's still pretty much a dangerous area nowadays, but for other reasons. I like the way they bounced back and forth between what was going on in Nassau and what was going on with Flint and Company. And then, the other little thing. So it kept my interest. It kept moving. It did have its slow parts, but that was more of, I think, for dramatic effect because, when you're stuck in the doldrums, there's not much to do other than sit around and die.
Right. What about you, Commodore?
I thought it was great. It kept her interest in different strategizing, how to deal with the new governor coming in and then the things going on the ship with just stealing the food and having to find food and all of that. So it kept you at the edge of your seat, I thought.
Now, that's one thing I wanted to ask you all. About the rations, how would you feel if, you were John Silver and he's like, okay, we're going to cut the rations again, but this time we're not going to feed half the crew?
That's what we do to survive.
I don't know if I could do that.
Well, that's why you're captain. You get to make the hard decisions, if it's a matter of being able to keep some of the crew alive to actually get someplace to get more food and water, then that's what has to be done. It's, the greater good of the ship.
As the quartermaster, it was his job to raise concerns because he's technically as powerful as the captain back then in the golden age of piracy. Captain and quartermaster were almost really equal except when it came to battle. In emergency situations, and that's where Flint really that was his job, and he had to overrule John Silver, but it was John Silver's place to raise concerns and be concerned about the crew.
So John Silver's role as the quartermaster, as we've pretty much figured out, is pretty much to be the voice of the crew.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Now, I do have a question, because since we have you guys on, we were talking back and forth last week about Flint and how crazy out of his mind he's becoming. He's kind of on the edge. He's really... What?
I did say that the other day myself.
Yeah, he's really skating the line. And I think Billy and John both they've been talking about it on the episodes about, like, he's not necessarily making the best decisions for the crew. And at some point, we're going to have to challenge him. What would happen? What would have to happen for John to challenge him and successfully win? Would that be considered a mutiny, or would that be the right of the quartermaster to challenge the captain?
Golden Age of piracy was very different than the rest of history as far as piracy went. Captains were elected, and they only kept their positions either through being very skillful at what they did or being very bloodthirsty and just having everybody afraid of them. You could pretty much challenge for captaincy at any particular time, and it happened quite a bit in real life as far as pirates went. If the crew didn't like what was going on, they could all get together and vote the captain out. As far as what for John Silver to win, he would just pretty much just play on the fact that everybody's starving and make promises, pretty much, you know, and it would just be up to Flint to either just, you know, be a bigger bully, I guess, or just, you know, be able to sweet talk his way out of it.
Okay, interesting. So it wouldn't have to be like a bat, like they wouldn't have to fight each other. It would just be election.
Yeah, that's
pirate ships were very diplomatic. You know, the crew voted on most everything except when you're in battle. Even what prize they took, they voted on.
Okay. So while we're staying with the whole ship, you know, the dead, I guess, what do you call it when they have no wind?
They're called the calm.
It's called the calm?
The calm.
Okay. So while they're in this... It's funny because Billy and John and the rest of the crew, they basically see this whale floating, and I forget the person's name who was saying that, look, if they're floating, we can't eat that meat, it's bad, because it only floats after it's way, way rotten. I loved the fact that John used that as a way to get Flint basically to push the situation, to force him to see,
yeah,
like, you're either going to have to challenge me and win and then deal with the crew because I'm just as liked as you are, or you're going to have to work together with me because you're not necessarily making the best decisions right now. And don't for a second think that you're smarter than me because this is what I did. And he took a real chance doing that. Flint could have easily thrown him overboard, especially since John is not at his full capacity. What did you guys think about that? Did you think that was a smart move? I mean, obviously it worked out, but did you think it was a smart move when it first started happening in the scene?
That's a really good question. I was watching that, and I'm thinking, this is not going to end well. I think the only thing that saved when Flint asked him get done with his share, turned around and basically said, I can do it. I think that was pretty much the only thing that saved him at that point. I thought that when Mr. Silver started mouthing off to the captain. Then.
Right. I have to agree with you on that one. I think he definitely made his decision not to be ruthless against John Silver when he said, the reason why he gave up the shares was because the only thing that mattered to him at this point was being part of the crew. And I think he saw at that point that he really would do anything for the crew and to be part of the crew, and that was his saving grace. I still don't think he's out of the clear, though.
Well, considering how he originally got in to be on the ship to begin with, you know, he didn't originally plan on staying with the crew. He wanted his money, and then he was going to move on. So now he's given up his money, and he wants to stay with the crew, which is a complete 360.
Absolutely. And what did you guys think, Amy, you can jump in here if you want. What did you guys think about, so I was watching this with my roommate, Jamie, who you guys also know, and we were watching the episode when they were basically egging on sharks. You know, they were pounding on the I didn't understand at first why he was doing that, and then when the shark bounced back up against the boat, I was like, oh, okay, now I know why they did that.
I think that
what did you guys think? I was terrified.
I really thought that he was coming on the bottom of the boat in frustration, and just came.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah, I don't think purpose to see if there's anything under. I think he was just the look on his face. It looked more like he was just banging on it because, you know, the whale was inedible.
Yeah, and then the sharks were there until he started banging, and then they banged back. And because if you look at the look on his face, it's like, all right, what's that? And then they look over and they see the sharks. It's like, okay, we can eat those, you know.
Right.
And then my crazy thought was when the shark was pulling the boat, I was like, just rope a couple of those, tie them to the ship. That was my crazy thought. But
you're not the only one, because Jamie said the same thing. She's like, yeah, now just get four more of them.
Exactly.
But honestly, I thought, Amy, when you were looking at the scene, it was a very well done scene. When they got that shark and he took off and that boat was going, I was like, that rope is not going to stay around there, and he's going to fly off of that boat because that shark is super powerful, one. Or two, it's going to start sinking the boat because they can go down, and that shark was big enough to take that boat down underwater.
And I was like, rope burn, and then I was like, man, he's probably got calluses already. So that was fine with that. Yeah.
What's his plan? He could have grabbed the rope and at least helped him.
Yeah, right? I was like, why isn't he grabbing the other end of the rope?
Yeah, well, that's kind of like a whaling technique where they harpoon the whale and then they wrap the rope around not exactly bowsprit or whatever it is on there. I did notice a continuity thing when they first show him wrapping a rope around his team. He's got two hitches going down, and then they finally take off. There's only one. And it's like, he did have plenty. He did have plenty of slack to let the shark go. So, that was. Go back to like Jaws.
Yeah, I did think that it was definitely an exciting scene. And then when they pulled the shark up on the boat, I was like, someone is going to get bit. Just the mere fact that they could pull that humongous shark onto that boat. And then he's like, okay, let's go get another one. And I'm thinking to myself, I said to Jamie, I was like, you barely got one shark on that boat. That boat's not big enough for two sharks.
And then I was really scared to the ship.
Yeah, that was scary.
Say that again?
I was actually thinking.
What were you saying to Amy?
Oh, that was scary. I was panicking. I thought it was going to topple over with them. I was going to end up in the water. I was scared.
Right. Yeah. So, the other thing, so we talked about that, and of course they ate they cut shark up, and that looked like some pretty good meat. Do do you think that that would have held them over for another week or two at least if they didn't get the win back?
I don't know if it would have lasted that long because fish meat rots pretty quickly, and being that they're out in the middle of the Atlantic and in the Gyre, no less, it gets really hot out there, and it might have lasted them a couple of days before it got to the point where everybody just got sick from eating it. I don't know.
Unless they could salt it. Yeah, unless they could salt it and preserve it, but I doubt they had that much salt on board.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's a question for you before we start moving over to what's happening on Nassau with the governor and the rest of the crews. The fact that the two, that there was a, basically he said, she said, I didn't, argument between two of the shipmates, the crewmates, that supposedly stole rations, which...
Mm-hmm.
You know, people do get a little crazy when they're hungry. I can understand them doing it. And I do think that my first thought, and maybe I'm just a little bit too much like Flint, my thought was, end of argument, shoot them both. I didn't think Flint was actually going to do that because when Amy and I were talking about Flint and about how, yes, he's a ruthless character and he will do whatever he needs to do to get what he needs and get what he wants and to stay in power. He's usually a very reasonable person. He's usually very diplomatic, even though he can be ruthless. I didn't expect him to actually do it, but that was my first thought was, you guys can't agree. The food's gone, and you guys got to learn not to do it. Shoot them both. But it seems like Billy and John Silver reacted very, very strongly to that. Would that have been commonplace? I mean, do you think that Captain Flint made the right call? Was he a little heavy-handed? What do you guys think?
Usually the quartermaster was in charge of enforcing the laws of the ship and handing out punishments. So I think Flint really did kind of overstep his bounds at that point. And I wouldn't be surprised if both of them would have been either marooned or, well, actually there's no way of marooning them at that point other than throwing them overboard. Because they weren't going anywhere. I really do think that Flint was just a little over the top there, probably because at that point, like he was saying before, when he was telling Billy that they had to watch Silver about being dehydrated and people not being in their right minds, I think at that point he was a little out of his mind at that point too. So I think mm-hmm. that was a bit strong. I think that was a bit strong, but I think at that point, nobody really could stand up to him. And one of those situations, I guess, it's you were there, and what do you do? You know?
Right.
Well, you have to realize they're in dire straits. They're down to their last crumb, very little water, and these guys are stealing food, whether they're arguing back and forth, enough is enough. Now we've got two less mouths to feed. You got to do what you have to do to protect the rest of the crew. And, you know, he could have handled it differently, but, you know, he in his mind did, you know, enough. I'm done screwing around. I'm making an example out of these two is basically what he did.
Right. And that was my thought process too. And it seems like the captain kind of thinks that he did go overboard. Do you think that he went over? Was he heavy-handed in his doling out of justice, or do you think that he made the right decision that whether he shot him or whether they threw him overboard, it needed to be done?
Well, I think they would have been put to death anyway because that was pretty much a typical sentence for that kind of an infraction. If you stole from the crew, you were mm-hmm. definitely usually going to die. Or get really severely beaten to the point where you're going to die. It wasn't really his place to do that, though. That was more John Silver's place, but I guess maybe he was thinking that Silver was just being wishy-washy and he just stepped up and did it. That's the only thing I could think of.
So I'm thinking he was just a little bit too impatient and he overstepped his bounds because it sounded like Silver was going in that direction.
No, I don't think he was, Jess.
No,
I don't think so
either.
No,
because
I don't think he was.
He's trying to protect the crew, and he's trying to get the two to, you know, to fess up. Me, if I was sober, I would have punched them in the gut and see who threw up the most food. But, you know, Flint dumped them and shot them both. So,
Commodore, yeah. You're hardcore. Amy, why do you think that he wouldn't have been as heavy-handed?
Because he should have done something sooner instead of just giving this big long speech. So I'm happy.
That's kind of. I mean, that's kind of John Silver's character, though. I mean, he was always the showman. So it seemed like he was giving them enough rope to hang themselves, but Flint was just, I'm not dealing with this right now. We don't have time for this crap. You're wasting energy.
Well, exactly. They don't have time for it. So
exactly.
I think he did great. I would have done it sooner.
Time. They're not going anywhere.
Right.
But,
I mean,
yeah, he's
it was interesting. I thought it also was interesting that Billy even said to John, like, are you going to say something? And I think John had the presence of mind to not say anything because he knew he might have been next, because Flint seemed to be a little out there at that point in time.
Well, he was having illusions, so. I mean, he did see his dead woman.
Hallucinations,
yeah.
I mean, why did he say he was
sorry? He's been having those hallucinations off and on since she died, you know, since she was shot.
Yeah, and I'm happy. I'm really happy she's actually speaking now, because just the silent screams were freaking me out.
We were trying to figure out what she was saying the whole time. What is she saying?
Yeah, got out of was help.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get anything.
I'm asking you, and that's all I was able to read, because it went away too fast. So,
so apparently, we're going to figure this out. We're going to watch it again.
Yeah.
We're going to figure out what she's saying.
And that black finger keeps showing up. Right. Well, I think Amy was able to pick out just that one help. And I saw some of it too, but it was too fast. And I have to just sit there and go back and forth between finding out what it is. But the silent scream, I have to agree, was creepy as hell. So we pretty much, as they're eating the shark, the wind picks up. So we know that they're kind of saved in that point. Captain, do you know where they are geographically? Do you know what part of the world they're in?
They are in the Sargasso Sea, which is directly in the middle of the Atlantic Gyre, which is basically right smack in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. If you were to look at the coast of the United States, it's pretty much right off of Cape Hatteras, and just head straight out a couple of hundred miles, and just sit like right in the middle there between Europe and the United States. It is right where it is. And the reason it's such a weird place is because it's in the middle of that giant current that circulates, starts with the Gulf Stream, comes up around, comes over by the Arctic, and comes back down around Europe and past Africa and goes back down to the Antarctic and comes around, and it creates this giant circle that right in the center, the water just sits still. So if you get stuck in there and there's no wind, that's why it was so dangerous. You're not going anywhere. If you watched it, they had a little bit of a wind, but it wasn't enough to really move them, and they were kind of drifting with that, and they just weren't making any kind of progress at all. And it's just a very dangerous place to be in if you're a sailing ship that doesn't have a motor. But you can get stuck.
So,
you know, nowadays it's not that big of a deal. You have radios, so you can call for help, but back then you got stuck out there, you were in big trouble.
Yeah,
we saw
like from Florida going up to New York, right in the middle there.
Right. I've gotten stuck in some storms off of Cape Hatteras on a cruise ship, and it was not a fun time. So I can only imagine what that storm was like on that ship. But do you guys know where they wound up landing when they did get wind?
I'm guessing they were probably at the Azores.
Okay.
That's the only other islands out there is Bermuda. And I don't think they were anywhere near Bermuda, and those islands did kind of look like the Azores. So they were probably closer to Africa at that point than they were to the United States.
Okay.
So, you know, I could be wrong, but, you know.
So they all landed on this ship. I mean, they all landed on land. And and then they kind of scroll back. They pull back, and you see the natives are watching them. And for a minute, I was like, okay, are these people that also were shipwrecked, or are these natives? And it looks like they're just natives. And as soon as I saw them, I turned to Jamie, and I'm like, they better get off that damn island, or they're going to get eaten. They're going to be dinner.
That's the first thing I said, cannibals.
Yep.
Oh, okay, see, that's where I got confused, because I thought that was on Nassau,
yeah,
where those people are, and they were coming to help, because there was, I think it was like season one, where you see the tribes.
Yeah, well,
those
tribes of Indians were pretty common through that whole area. They traveled around quite a bit. So I don't think they were in anywhere near the Bahamas or Bermuda or anywhere. I think they were more closer to the Azores at that point. Could be wrong.
Yeah, that's
okay.
We'll see. I mean,
hard to guess from the show itself.
Right, especially since we can't really tell, because Captain Flint's crew, and we've talked about this before, Captain Flint's crew is not an actual crew, because these are characters that are based off of Treasure Island.
Walrus is a fictional ship, and everybody on the Walrus is fictional.
Right. And we did talk a little bit about who is real and who isn't real, but we know, based on the research that we've done, that Captain Flint crew is all a fictional crew.
This whole program is a prequel to Treasure Island. It's 20 years before Treasure Island.
Right. So we're jumping now to our real-life pirates, or most of them, to Nassau and what's happening there. The governor and Eleanor Guthrie. Okay, I have a question, because I was doing research. I was trying to find different characters who were actually legitimately historical figures. I could not find anything on Eleanor Guthrie. I think
fictional.
She's an amalgamation. Is that correct?
Yeah, she's fictional. She's a fictional character.
Okay. The only
Guthries I found were lords in England like 200 years later, or 150 years later, actually.
Okay. So she is a fictional character. The idea of her, though, is not fictional, though. There were very strong characters. I mean, not characters like fictional characters, but there were very strong female, pirates. I don't want to say queens, but, you know, there were.
Are you reading all those people here?
Right. And
there were merchants in these different ports that would take pirate goods and sell them. They would buy them and sell them. So pirates were able to make their money in places like Nassau and Port Royal before Law and Order took over there, and Tortuga. You know, people, you know, they had to get their money somehow. And there were a lot of places with people like Eleanor Guthrie that would come and take their stuff and sell it for them, consignment, things like that. That's how they made their money.
So the governor and Eleanor Guthrie are traveling with this fleet from England, and it comes out that the reason why, and, you know, obviously the crew has now gotten word that these guys are on the horizon, Jack Rackham, basically, who is, I think he's based off of Calico Jack, correct?
No, that's, yeah, he's
Calico Jack.
Supposed to be Calico Jack, Jack and Bonnie are two of the real characters that are actually in the show.
Right. And we talked, we did some research and things like that off air, and you guys and I have spoken regarding some of the real characters that, you know, he was definitely, his character is very true to the records that we're seeing of him, that he was a showman just like John Silver was. And he kind of knew how to convince people to do things. But in addition to that, he was also a very successful diplomatic captain, in that he tended to get himself out of situations by talking as opposed to by battling. And he did have Anne, and I apologize for last week. I kept referring to Anne Bonnie as Liz Bonnie. So that's a little retraction for me. I forgot her name, and for some reason Liz stuck in my head. And Anne Bonnie and him were, she was on the crew, and there was a third character at some point in time, a third person who was like another female character, which I think Max is not an actual character. There is no Max, but there was a Mary that was
Mary Reed.
The three of them. Mary Reed.
Yeah.
Yep. There was
originally
Mary.
Came on their ship, and they thought she was he.
Right.
And Rackham got very upset because Bonnie and Reed became very close because they knew they were both females, and he thought that Bonnie was
stepping out on
smitten with this other male. Yeah,
right.
in real life, you know. So
right.
It turned out that she was a he, or he was a she. So
that's kind of playing with
right.
the timeline here, because Mary Reed doesn't show up in Anne Bonnie and Jack Rackham's life until after everybody left Nassau.
Right.
So they really are playing with the timeline here as far as actual history. An example is Hornigold. Hornigold died when he was 39. This guy that they have is,
he's like 60.
Yeah. So they're playing games with the history and stuff, but that's all right. It is a story.
Right.
And I like correcting people when they ask me about it. So gives me something to talk
right.
about.
Right. Yeah, it's very interesting to see that. And so here's a question. Jack Rackham is trying to, and we see Blackbeard show up. I know you guys are really excited about that. Blackbeard is an awesome character. Blackbeard shows up. He's a little disillusioned with what NASA has turned into. It's kind of gotten a little soft. He meets up with Charles Fane, and they did know each other, the two of them. And he did know Jack Rackham as well. Jack's trying to convince all of the crews to basically make a stand. And he's right. He's delusional that he thinks everybody's going to organize, because that's just not what pirates do, different crews. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's got a point there. But not without risk. He's asking them to take a very, very large risk. And the chances of him being able to get all of them to agree is pretty slim. Until he basically tells them, I'm just going to call you all pussies to your face until you're afraid to say no. I'm going to publicly humiliate you so that everybody else thinks that you're weak unless you agree to do this. It's an interesting tactic. I don't know if it would have worked, but they're all looking for Flint to be the leader of this armada. And it's not happening because Blackbeard thinks that Flint is dead. Hornigold found the flag.
Yeah, everybody thinks
there?
Flint is dead.
Yeah, everybody thinks he's dead. Blackbeard offers to lead this fleet if Charles Vane decides to leave Nassau with him. Here's the question. Did this actually happen? Did this standoff between the governor of Nassau, and I don't remember which governor this is, did this standoff
Roger.
Actually happen?
No. He did show up at Nassau and offer pardons, but there really wasn't a standoff because they weren't organized. There were just so many pirates running around. But his way of dealing with it was just to offer people. It was the king was wasn't Charles. I can't remember which king was the one who authorized him to offer all these pardons, and that's how he ended up taking control of Nassau. There wasn't, much of a standoff at all.
Okay.
He was a known factor to all these people already anyway, because he was a privateer himself.
And a lot of the pirates, yeah, they took the pardons and they went out and they still did pirating, but just went into other ports rather than coming into, you know, back to that port to sell their goods.
Okay. Amy, do you have any questions when we have these guys on the line in regards to what happened or what they thought, or do you want to get any comments?
I don't have any questions, but I do want to make a comment.
Okay.
They're going to come on next week too, right? Because I'm loving this. I'm loving this. Like, I just got lost. I was a listener. I was not a host. I just got lost, and I'm loving it. So keep going, Jess. Just keep going. I'm just gonna
keep going
to sit back and listen.
All right. Okay. I felt bad because she was so quiet.
Don't feel bad.
Yeah, I'm getting some education here. It's making the show more exciting for me. So yeah, I'm loving this.
Yeah. So you have a lot of real pirates that were in real life together with each other. Jack Rackham was actually on Charles Vane's crew, but he got Vane voted out and actually took over Vane's crew years later. They did have the Pirate Republic on that island until Wood Roger came and pretty much, you know, cleaned it out. Hornigold was actually the one who founded that whole Pirate Republic. He was the one who started it, a pirate hunter, but he died like a year later when he shipwrecked.
And Vane, at one point, wasn't he first mate for Blackbeard?
I wouldn't say he was first mate, but he was on Blackbeard's crew.
Yeah. He was
associated with Blackbeard, and Blackbeard gave Vane one of his ships, and they went off of pirating together, and then they eventually split. But Rackham was one of Vane's people until they split. And that was an argument over a prize. Vane had attacked a ship that he mistook for a merchant, and it turned out to be a French warship. And he immediately turned around and said, "I want to run away." And the rest of the crew said, "No, we want to fight." And that's what Rackham used to depose Vane. And it's if you really look at these people that are involved in this show, they were really heavily integrated into each other's crews at one point in time. Blackbeard was actually on Hornigold's crew when he first started out. They were privateers, and then they eventually all ended up becoming pirates. But Hornigold's thing was that he never attacked a British ship. That was the only way he thought he could keep himself legal as a privateer, even though he took everybody else's stuff, and why he was eventually offered pardon and became a pirate hunter.
Well, even Eleanor said at one point when she was, you know, who's going to go row into Nassau and read off this proclamation? And she said that pretty much almost everybody on there has at one point been on Hornigold's ship. They all integrate. So,
yeah. It is a very incestuous sort of relationship with pirates.
Yes.
Question for you. What is the difference between a privateer and a pirate? I know a lot of people have asked that question, and I figured I'd ask directly from the source.
It depends on your point of view. Like, as I like to tell a lot of people, one monarch's privateer is another monarch's pirate. A privateer is basically a legalized pirate. He has what was called a letter of marque. Permission to actually go out and take ships that are enemies to his monarch. That's why people like people that were Queen Elizabeth's sea dogs, even though they were privateers, the King of France and the King of Spain called them all pirates. He called England a nation of pirates, even though they considered themselves legal and able to do that. So it's kind of a fine line as to what a privateer is versus a pirate, and it all comes down to what end of the cutlass you're facing.
And also what mood the queen is in. With Elizabeth, you were a privateer and we're going after Spain, then, okay, you're a privateer, but we're friends with Spain now, but we're going up to France. So when she made that proclamation, you know, we're enemies of France now, not Spain. If you went after Spanish ships, now you're a pirate and, you know, subject to hang. But, you know, and she constantly went back and forth with her alliance between Spain and France, you know.
Well, to be fair, that was a kind of iffy situation for a couple, you know, decades or so.
Yes.
That was how England made their money, was off of their privateers. Drake was considered one of England's most heroic privateers, but Spain and France called him a vicious pirate. I said, it all comes down to perspective, you know, which side of the coin you're looking at.
So, funny fact, you know that there is still one United States ship that actually has a mark for privateering.
Yes.
Do you know which one it is and where it is?
I can't think of it off the top of my head.
It's up here in New England. I think it's either Connecticut or Rhode Island. And I know a member of the ship. He lives on the ship, and he teaches how to be a privateer. And I'm saying that in quotation marks, how to be a privateer. But he does a lot of rum and scotch tastings when we go to a specific convention that we go to. And he's the one that told me that they actually received in the 21st century, the 20th century, it was a couple of years ago before the turn, before 2001, right, that they actually received a letter of marque from Queen Elizabeth II. So they are legitimately a legal privateering ship.
Awesome.
Yep, I read about that. I still, for the last night, can't remember the name of the ship.
I can't remember it either, but I know that it's either Connecticut or Rhode Island, because the convention that we go to is in Rhode Island, and I know it's right around that area. So, a little known fact, if you ever want to really visit a pirate ship, look it up, and I'm sure they would be happy to trade stories with you guys. Road trip!
That's cool. There's plenty of pirates there, you'll probably know it.
Right. Now, the Orca Gold, is that a fictional prize? Did Jack Rackham and Charles Vane and Horn of Gold all go after this Orca Gold from Spain?
The Orca itself, I think, is fictional, but what happened is that there was a Spanish treasure convoy that sunk off the coast of Florida right around that time, and it drew pirates and privateers like flies, and Rackham was involved, and Vane was involved, and basically all the pirates back there, they all flocked to Florida to raid the Spanish camps that were there that were trying to salvage the gold. So that, they're kind of playing with the history, which is fine, because it is a fictional story, but it does have a little bit of truth to it, that there was a massive amount of gold floating around due to a storm. That was actually
okay.
I think, as far as the name of the ships, there could have been a ship named the Orca, but it was more than one that went off the coast of Florida.
Okay. Amy is from North Carolina. She is very interested in Blackbeard, since she calls him her pirate. What do you guys know about Blackbeard? Is he kind of true to form? We haven't seen too much of him, but he seems to be very diplomatic. He does seem to be fairly ruthless, but he seems to be like a real-life character of Flint before he went over the edge, where he was diplomatic and well-spoken and smart. What do you guys, do you have any input on that?
From what I've read about Blackbeard, he was a very intelligent man. He was very forceful. That was how he was able to keep this captaincy. You didn't dare try to vote him out. He was a very large individual. That's what I like about having Ray Stevens as Blackbeard, because Blackbeard was said to be 6'4". He was said to be a very large man. I'm just watching about how people used to join crews, and you know, two men would fight, and the winner would join the crew. And I remember a story about Blackbeard playing cards with his crew and shooting his, I believe it was his first mate in the knee, and saying, "I have to do stuff like that, otherwise people forget who I am." You know. So I think
very vicious.
I think right now this one, not so much vicious, but just a very forceful character who knew what he needed to do. And so far, I think this Blackbeard is true to character. And his beard needs to be a little bit longer, though. But, you know, let's see if he has, like, the fuses coming out of his hat and stuff when they finally do go to battle. So, the jury's still out as far as how this Blackbeard's going to flesh out. But so far, he seems to be pretty true to character.
Okay, because I'm really not getting the viciousness from him. I do see that he's disappointed that Nassau's kind of gotten soft. But I really don't see him as being vicious so much as super intelligent and well-spoken and able to play the game. So I'm thinking that it's going to happen, because none of these guys, like, if you were to see these people in everyday life, you'd run the other way. These are not people that
you
really want to be friends with.
You might run the other way. You might run the other way. I'm just stupid enough to be like, hey!
Well, you know, everybody likes the bad boys, so that's not necessarily true. I wouldn't really run away, but only if I was intentionally putting myself in that kind of situation. But, you know, as a normal law-abiding citizen, if you encounter these people, it's not necessarily going to be good for you if you have something that they want.
Ned Lowe, the character Ned Lowe, was a typical example. He was another real pirate, and he was a vicious cur. And they played him up pretty well.
Yeah.
Hello?
Okay.
Yeah. But if you remember the beginning of season 3's second episode, when his ninth wife's brothers come into his cabin and none of them make it out, that's what he was like. Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, that was
right. Although Amy likes Blackbeard, she's in love with Charles Fane because, you know, he's gorgeous. But
yes.
Also,
makes me sound
somewhat
so vain.
Of a mystery. Well, you are so vain. You're so Charles Fane. I can't really argue. I mean, there's some pretty looking men on this show. Although I have to say that all of Captain Flint's crew has gotten exponentially cuter and hotter over the break, because I was not attracted to John Silver before, and now I'm just like, ha-ha-ha, where is John Silver? Give me that peg leg. I have to get a little goofy. We've got too much history going on. Gotta keep it exciting for the ladies. But Vane, where was I going with this? Vane, there's a mystery about Vane in this season. And he's talking when Jack Rackham has him, basically tricks him into finding the slaver ship, and he thinks it's a merchant ship. And he says to the merchant, you know who I am, but you don't know where I came from. And if you did, you wouldn't have behaved this way, or you would have made different decisions today. And then he drowns him. And then with his dealing with Jack and saying, you know, why did you do this? And Jack apologizing, I know how much you don't like this. And then also him being out working with the slavers and being concerned about how the slaves are being treated. Do we know if this is based in reality? Do we know anything about this mystery, or are we just going to have to wait and see what happens in the season?
No. Vane is kind of an enigma himself in real life. Nobody's really sure where he came from. The only thing we really do know for sure is how he died.
Tell us.
Well, no, you don't want to know what happened to him in real life? Right, I won't tell you that. But,
us yet. When it gets closer, you can tell us.
Well, I don't know if they'll do it in the show. I don't know how far they're going to take this timeline. You know, like I said,
I know he's lived long. I know he dies in his 40s.
most pirates died fairly young.
Right.
It was not an occupation you stayed in for a very long time. Most of these pirate captains, if they were lucky, had maybe a good 3 years before they either died from disease, shipwrecks, or got caught and hung. So it was a tough life. It wasn't an easy life at all. And some of these people fell into it because it was the only way they could survive. And other people did it because pirates in general were just not nice people.
And a lot of your crew that turned pirate was when the Queen cut back on her Navy. And they just sent all the sailors off going, "We don't need you anymore. See ya." They had no other livelihood, so they just signed on these pirate ships. And
to survive.
Okay. I think that's a little soft on the pirate side of things. They were sailors. They could have done fishing. They could have fished. There were other things that they could have done.
You don't have the money for a boat or whatever. And when the pirates took a ship, they would ask the crew of the ship they have taken whether they wanted to join them. And a lot of them said, because that's the only life they knew, you know. They didn't have any other skills.
Now, some of the scenes in the show so far have been brutal. Are you guys appreciating that, or do you think it's too much?
No, I appreciate it because it's actually showing pirates look like.
Okay, wait. One at a time. It's okay.
Pirates were brutal. We walk around now dressed as pirates and, you know, all happy and everything, but it was a hard life. They were not nice people, you know, and they're pretty much portraying that the fact that it was a hard life and you didn't live long, you know, and if you came up against the pirate, your chances of living to see another day were 50-50. Some were more brutal than others.
Okay, Captain.
I really appreciate it because I really do feel that they're showing what pirates were actually like. So much of modern lore for pirates, movies and stuff like that romanticize piracy, and it's not the way it was. I have people constantly complaining to me that I'm ruining their romance. And I'm like, pirates were not nice people. They were murderers. They were thieves. They would torture people to find out where the treasure was, if they thought they were holding out. So I kind of appreciate the brutality in the show because it's more true to life. I think that's one of the things that actually makes this program, at least for me.
Do you think that they could push it farther and still be more true to life?
If you really study pirate history and you read the accounts from people that had been victims of pirates, some of the stuff they're doing right now is kind of tame compared to what some of these guys did. Guys supposed to be good guys like Morgan, Captain Morgan, who was supposed to be this English privateer and hero, he, on a regular basis, tortured Spaniards to find out information. They just were not nice people, and they would do nasty things. And some of these people were just psychopaths. They didn't care what kind of pain they inflicted. They really didn't care.
Mm-hmm. Now you're mentioning Captain Morgan as people would know them, he didn't make the rum, but we're talking about Captain Morgan of the rum.
This was Henry Morgan. He became Lieutenant Governor of Jamaica, and he ended up dying because he liked to drink too much, and rum was supposedly one of his favorite drinks, so I think that's why they kind of named the rum after him. But he was not a nice guy, especially when it came to the Spaniards. He really did not like the Spanish, and he had no qualms about hanging these guys up and beating them with the flat edge of the cutlasses and burning them and just doing really nasty stuff to get information out of them. You know, and people thought, oh, he was a good guy. No. Again, it comes down to what side of the coin you're on. You know, if you're not on his side, he was not a nice guy.
Well, I mean, in general, I think the time frame itself, even all the way back to Elizabethan times to this time period, you know, nobody was really, I don't think you could say, and even to this day, I don't think you can say anybody is 100% a good guy, depending on the situation. Most people aren't psychopaths now, thank goodness. But you kind of did what you needed to do in the time to survive and get ahead. And if that meant that you were ruthless, that's how you survived. There was no handouts with a lot of these time periods that we're talking about, Elizabethan or colonial or, you know, just pre-colonial, the golden age of piracy. There were no handouts. You didn't get anything for free. You worked and you worked your ass off to get what you needed, and you did what you had to do to survive. I can appreciate that in that, you know, these guys in another situation, you know, potentially maybe could have been good guys, but the likelihood that that would have happened, given the time period, they probably would have wound up in a ditch if they were. So I can appreciate that. One last question that I know a lot of people ask, why are pirates known for drinking rum? Is there a reason behind it? I know the answer, but I want to hear it from you guys.
Logs. That's how they kept the water, the fresh water, from going stagnant. They would mix rum with it, and that would be part of the rations. Your rum and water.
It was a holdover from the Navy, and also from the merchant seamen. Like the Commodore said, it was part of their daily rations. But it wasn't just rum. That was just something that they drank on ship. I think that people think pirates drank rum all the time because of the grog. But we were discussing this on Facebook the other day, actually, in one of the pirate boards, about what people actually drank back then, especially in the New World. And rum didn't really start to come until towards the end of the Golden Age as a readily available thing, because it came from sugarcane, so there was other things like rye. Rye was a very popular thing. It was easy to make for them back then. And there were many other alcohols, that wines and beers that pirates would drink other than just, you know, rum.
Right.
You have your ales.
Yep.
Right. And the reason one, to keep the water stagnant, also the water wasn't that great.
Nope. No, it wasn't.
Because you track the water in barrels. You're on ships for months at a time without fresh water supply. That water is going to get stagnant in there, you know. So they would mix the alcohol, the rum, with it, or whatever alcohol they had, and it would prevent the fresh water from turning green and making them sick.
The alcohol would have probably killed a lot of bacteria in there as well.
Yes, it did.
As well as the algae. Yeah. And that's the same even on land, too. I mean, the latrine situation wasn't the best either, so it was probably safer to drink alcohol than it was to drink water on land. I don't know if that was true for Nassau, but I know in a lot of areas in colonial, not so much in colonial America because it wasn't as populated just then, but later on it seemed to be a little bit more dicey to drink the water.
Yeah, in Europe back then, they would actually drink wine or beer instead of drinking water. And instead of giving water to kids, because the water was so bad, that the kids would have watered down wine or watered down beer. It's You know, they tended not to drink a lot of water because of that problem.
Right.
I don't know if you noticed, but Tortuga, which is actually the Caymans, there is no fresh water supply.
I didn't notice that. But yeah, it's all salt water.
Yeah, there's no fresh water there. They ship it in, or they have a plant there. So there was no fresh water on that island when the pirates were there.
Okay. Well, any last thoughts about this episode? Amy, you want to come back to reality and give us your last thoughts about what you want to see happen in the next episode?
I don't know. I don't want there to be a fight. I don't know. But I'm very excited. I'm very excited about the next episode. I want to see what happens.
I'm wondering if they're going to bring Steve Bonnet in, because Steve Bonnet comes in and meets up with Blackbeard at Nassau in real life. So I'm wondering if he's going to be like the next character they're going to introduce. Like they brought Ned Lowe in. Like Ned Lowe like showed up and he was there for a couple episodes. I wonder if they're going to bring in somebody like Steve Bonnet, who was a known associate of Blackbeard as well. So I'm kind of looking forward to see what they're going to do with this. See how true to history they're going to try to stay. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Commodore, do you have a wish list for what you think is going to happen or what you want to happen?
Longer episodes. But other than that, no.
I can't wait for the next one.
I know. They just seem shorter and shorter. They fade to black. Like, no! I'm just can't wait for the next one because I'm on the edge of my seat. I've been like that since it began, so can't wait.
Now it's funny. Captain mentioned Steve Bonnet. It's funny because a slight crossover time frame for you guys, same network, Stars, Outlander.
I love that
same
show.
Same time frame. If you've read the books, Steve Bonnet is a big bad guy in the future books. And there are some real, when we're looking at Outlander, the author did do a lot of historical information regarding to Outlander, and it was King Charles. We were discussing that before with King Charles because it's the same time frame that we're talking about with this pirating happening. But Stephen Bonnet is a huge character in the Outlander series, so it's interesting that the same network might have the same character in the future. It might be an interesting crossover, Outlander and Black Sails. I'm gonna put it out there.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've read all the Outlander books, so yeah, I know Pat Bonnet.
Yes. So not a nice guy. And they portrayed him pretty true to form in Outlander as well. They were not nice people. Some of them were downright just evil. And others were just kind of trying to make their way and do what they had to do. Ladies, gentlemen, thank you so much, Commodore and Captain, for joining us. And I hope that you will join us again next week. We will try to work around your schedule. I have also contacted an associate of yours as well. She needs to get caught up on some of the episodes before she can join us as well. But she's super psyched to come on, Marisol, and I don't know what her running name is, but she is super psyched to come on and join us as well. And if you guys can make it, we'll try to work around your schedule next week.
Definitely. I'll call in from wherever I'm traveling to.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having us.
It was a pleasure to just sit back and listen to everything you had to say. So thank you so much.
Most welcome.
Okay, guys. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our little history versus Black Sails lessons. Amy, you want to send us out?
Yes. Yeah. Okay, guys, so you go over to our website, thevro.com. You can listen to all of our recap shows here. You can follow us on Twitter. And if you're listening on Audio Boom, thank you for listening to us on Audio Boom. If you're listening to us on Blog Talk Radio, thank you. Justin and I appreciate it. By the way, you can get all of our podcasts to go straight to your iPhone. All you have to do is look us up on iTunes. It's Variety Radio Online. So thank you. Thank you so much for listening to us. Until next week, have a safe and loving and Charles Vane week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye.